and I'm Baron Ron Heron for AM 1290.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your hosts every week, right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Neil, you were back in New York and you didn't even gain back the accent.
I know.
I think you've been here long enough, right?
Well, what happened was I went to New York and I also went to Boston. So I think what happens if you go to both places, it sort of counters each other. And then you end up, you know, with it, you mix a little bit of Boston, a little bit of New York, and you end up with
Rhode Island.
With Rhode Island, yeah, that's true. I was going to say
Providence,
not great. So we have a guest today?
We do. We have with us Don DiConstanzo, who is a serial entrepreneur and CEO and co-founder of Pedego Electric Bikes. Don, thanks for being here with us today.
Hi, Neil. Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Perfect. So we're going to start with some articles in the news, and we will come back. So be thinking of your questions for Don to call in with.
So the first article I found fascinating, and in fact, it's such a rich article. It could be the only article we do today, although we probably will move on, because it talks about trade deficits, which is in the news wherever we see financial issues. And it asks the question, is a trade deficit good or is it bad? It kind of explains what a trade deficit is and what the implications for a trade deficit. And the way the article begins, it says, let's take an example of a country that has only one product, bananas, and another country that only has one product, cars. So let's say that $1 million worth of dollars is bought to buy bananas from the car company, the car nation, and the banana people want cars, so they buy $2 million from car nation. So there's $1 million trade deficit. And so if you look at the administration's comment about a trade deficit, you would say, well, that's really bad for the banana land. But in fact, banana land got twice as much money for their bananas as they got for their cars. And in terms of winners and losers, the one with the deficit is going to benefit, because what happens when somebody runs a surplus? They have to do something with the money. And what they do with the money is they reinvest it, or they invest it in the country that has the deficit, either in terms of buying their bonds, which lowers the country's interest rates, or buying investing it in real estate or investing it in plant and equipment. So in effect, in a system like we have in the world today with capitalism, there has to be a trade between the deficit country and the country that's running a surplus. And so the reverse flow of goods actually has a benefit for both sides. So example of a country with a deficit being bad misses the point that in the case of China, which is the one that they're holding up as the worst example, what have the Chinese done with their surplus? They've bought bonds in this country, which has driven interest rates down, which has resulted in more plant and equipment being purchased with lower costs because interest rates are lower. It's permitted the country to borrow even in bad times, because when the 2008 disaster hit, the ability to borrow money was never at risk, because countries like China continue to buy our bonds, resulting in lower interest rates. countries also with surpluses buy real estate, which helps real estate developers, and they buy stocks. And when they buy stocks, it helps anyone who has an investment portfolio. So the flow of capital into one country is the inverse of a trade deficit. And so the idea that a trade deficit is bad is, quite frankly, a question that's not very clear. In fact, it's clear that to me that it all kind of works out. And one of the ironies is there's a thing called the Triffin dilemma, which is a 20th century economist came up with this idea, Robert Triffin, that if you are the provider of a global reserve currency, you will actually need to run a trade deficit to keep the world financial system from freezing. And that means that if we're going to maintain our status, the dollar, as the financial system's currency, we're always going to have a deficit. And there's so many benefits, obvious benefits of being the world's currency, is that when things get bad like they did in 2008, everyone goes to the dollar, which you're seeing now, by the way, because as countries who are second tier run into trouble, as they are apparently doing now, more and more money gets invested in American dollars, which means that we have more flexibility to do things because of the demand for our dollar. And if we were to lose that because we started a trade war and there were other alternatives, it may, in fact, short-term help our deficit, but that would not be a great thing.
Yeah, you know, part of it I feel like is a lack of understanding of what that means. And if anybody out there went to the economic forecast at the, that UCSB put on with Dr. Rupert, it feels as though this administration also has advisors that are misguided in what a trade deficit is. So the econ professor down at University of California at Irvine, who is a published author, doctor himself, he has his math wrong, which, you know, it is a problem when you have advisors that have their math wrong, that don't truly understand what a trade deficit and surpluses are and how they work in modern day. So, you know, I blame not only the administration for employing this person, but also that person for not going with the rest of the traditional economic fundamentals of what how you calculate trade deficits and surpluses.
And we haven't even touched on the idea of tariffs as a way to cure the trade deficits. All this article does is talk about why trade deficits are not necessarily bad, but what would exacerbate the problem is having a tariff war, which would basically tax consumers in this country. So, interestingly, you've got two problems here, a misunderstanding of deficits, and the solution is probably not the best solution, even if we had a problem with deficits. The next article is a little more simple to understand, and that is 2 years ago, Merrill Lynch decided, with all the talk about the fiduciary rule, which is a rule that basically says that you must put your client first.
But it goes beyond that, because what I find to be funny, or not funny in a laughing way, but curious and interesting, is that one of Merrill Lynch's tenets is to put your client first. What the fiduciary standard is that you're doing what's in your client's best interest. What the broker-dealer rule is a suitability rule, which means, can the client afford to do this? It may or may not be in their best interest. So now, I'm sorry, go on with your article that Merrill Lynch is considering reinstating commissions in their retirement accounts, which last year they prohibited in anticipation, thank you, of that ruling, the fiduciary ruling going through, which was supposed to hit April, I want to say, timeframe.
But the irony here is they announced 2 years ago that they were going to be first to embrace the fiduciary rule, and they had all kinds of publicity about how important it was. Now it's no longer important when the law changed that it's no longer required. I think it's sort of on the face very very strange that they went to trouble of saying how great it was, and now that they don't have to do it, it's not so important anymore.
It's really disappointing, actually, for a company such as, well, I guess it's now Bank of America, but a company that prides itself and has that as one of its tenets to no longer think it's important because the rules or laws have changed.
The next article is article in the New York Times that talks about new research that concludes that taxes are not what's keeping corporate money abroad, but it's tax havens, because they found that 40% of money that's kept offshore isn't real money. It's just bookkeeping entries. And the real issue is here is to deal with companies that insist upon taking advantage of the rate that they report rather than keeping money there. Rather than keeping money in these tax places. And that's why this article is saying that the money being repatriated, a lot of the money that, in fact, may be repatriated isn't real money. It's just paper profits being reversed.
That said, though, it will still be taxed, which the book entry wasn't.
Yes, but the idea is that it's not bringing cash back. So the idea that this is going to create jobs by creating money that could be used for factories, for new product, it's not real money. It may cost the companies, it will cost the companies to pay tax, but they're not going to bring any real cash back. So the net effect is it's worse for the people who would benefit by having money repatriated. You with me?
I'm not sure.
It's not cash.
Right. No,
so
I understand.
So let's say 40% of the dollars that are being brought back is a bookkeeping entry. They'll pay taxes on it, but there's no real cash there.
There's no
economic to the system. On that confusing and boring note, you are listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hospice of Santa Barbara is there to help when we're adjusting to living with a life-threatening illness, facing death, anticipating the death of a loved one, or healing our grief after a death. Hospice of Santa Barbara can provide the emotional, social, and spiritual care needed in a supportive, compassionate environment. Hospice of Santa Barbara provides professional counseling for individuals and has many support groups and programs for adults, teens, and children. Services are free, made possible by our community's generosity and by all of the highly trained, wonderful volunteers that give of their time to help those in need. If you would like to make a donation, become a volunteer, or support the important work of Hospice of Santa Barbara, or find out more about hospice services for you or someone you love, please call 563-8820, 563-8820, or visit our website at www.hospiceofsantabarbara.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
And if you're thinking about refinancing, now would be the time. The Fed just last week raised another quarter point, and so we'll see how that all turns out for long-term lending rates. We have with us Don DeConstanzo, who is a serial entrepreneur and the CEO and co-founder of Pedego Electric Bikes. Don, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about your early career, because when you look at your LinkedIn profile, it's not a straight line to electric bikes.
Well, that's true. I spent most of my early career in the automotive business, and I worked for an automotive chemical company and kind of worked my way up from entry-level sales job to become the president. And then the company was acquired by a larger company, and I found myself in a non-entrepreneurial environment. And it kind of kicked me to the curb and forced me to become an entrepreneur.
Isn't that funny how sometimes all you need is a little kick in the right direction?
Well, yeah, my father used to say I was in a warm bed. I needed to get out once in a while. Otherwise, you stay in a warm bed all day, you're not going to get anything accomplished. So once I did have an exit and I had a little bit of money, it was the time, I think, to become an entrepreneur. And I'm thankful for the time. And I'm really appreciative that I became an entrepreneur when I was 50 with the knowledge and experience I'd had learning from working in a big company. I was perfectly tuned to go out into the entrepreneur world and execute everything that I thought theoretically.
So what experiences would you say that, you know, being a 50-year-old entrepreneur, when you talk to most venture capitalists or funders of companies, they're usually looking for somebody a little younger. How did that work out for you in terms of what life experiences did you take to your entrepreneurial spirit that if you had done it sooner, you might have lacked or missed out on?
Well, I went to school and got a degree in marketing, and I studied the four P's, price, product, promotion, and placement. And those are what I learned in the corporate world is that they're all critical. You can't have one without the other. In fact, if I said pick three, you can't have the fourth. It would be a formula for failure. So during my years in the corporate world, I learned and studied and made sure that we mastered all four of those. And I carried that over when Pedego was formed to make sure that I'd covered each of those to the highest degree possible.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, for all of our listeners out there, if you don't know, Pedego is a company with $20 million in revenue, which is a huge feat and accomplishment. And Don, you should be really proud of the work that you've done there.
Well, I appreciate that. But more importantly, back to the original question, I come from old school where you have to turn a profit. So, you know, we started making a profit 3 years into the business. Since 2011, we've been profitable and cash flow positive. And I think that's what some people forget. Some companies form themselves and they're never interested in making a profit. I think profit's the fifth P, that you've got to be profitable. Otherwise, you don't have a long-term sustainable business model.
Absolutely. We have a caller. So, caller?
Richard.
Richard, yeah. Hi. Thanks so much for calling. You have a question?
Yes, I was wondering two things. One, there seemed to be one of the mysteries of the electric bike is the burn time on the batteries for the terrain that you ride it, both hills and with wind. And I asked the guys when I go in there, what is the burn time approximate of those batteries? And it's really hard to determine that. And then also, how long is the life of those new lithium batteries that are used?
Two excellent questions. The first question is as far as how long you're going to, how long the battery will take you. We have a whole bunch of different batteries depending on how far you want to go. So we have batteries that will take you up to 60 miles without pedaling. Now, obviously, terrain has a lot to do with it. If you're climbing straight up and you're not going down at all, then that would obviously not apply. But on the same token, if you're riding on a bike path and you're steady state and you're not pedaling, that's what the question should be. It's complicated by the fact that our bikes and some other bikes that are out there have what they call pedal assist function, where there's five different levels of pedaling. And depending on what level you're in, if some people would claim 100-mile range, 200-mile range, I think that's disingenuous because you can ride a bike, if you had it off, you could ride 5,000 miles in range and still have battery left. So I think you have to look at it and weigh it for what is the, on a level surface, how far will you go if you didn't pedal at all? And then you add pedaling into the equation, it complicates it. The second question you'd have is how long do you expect the batteries to last? When I started in this business 12 years ago, we used lead-acid batteries, and they were good for about 100 charges, and they would take you about 10 miles, and they weighed 30 pounds.
Wow.
Today the batteries weigh 6 pounds, and they'll take you 60 miles, and they're good for 2,000 charges. And we can thank the automotive world for that because the investment in technology and batteries has gone phenomenal because of the opportunity in automotive, and the electric bike industry gets the benefit of that. So I think you could reasonably expect 5 to 7 years of life out of a battery. It's important, though, that when you select a company you buy the bike from, that you think they're going to be here 5 to 7 years from now. Because otherwise, if the battery goes in 5 to 7 years and the company's not around to provide you a new battery, you then have a very heavy bike.
Right. For sure. You know, we actually have another caller for question for you. Mark, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I was wondering about the technology and how it's grown in the last few years. You see more and more electric bicycles, scooters, cars. Now, does that mean the chips and the circuitry has gotten smaller, or how does that all fit into the increase in the number of electric vehicles?
Well, Mark, I think that whether it's an electric car, electric motorcycle, or an electric bicycle, the answer is still the same. There's a much bigger investment being made in that, and I can tell you that the technology today on the bikes that we sell today is phenomenally better than it used to be. Although people expect the price to go down because the technology is going up and the price is not reduced in 10 years, because we're dealing with batteries and we're dealing with science, not technology purely. So unless we can change the science of the batteries, the prices remained essentially the same, but the technology has gotten better. So when we started, we had $1,500 bikes. Today, our bikes are $2,295 up to $5,500, and we're a mid-range electric bike. You can find them cheaper than $2,200, although you get what you pay for, and you can certainly find $9,000 and $10,000 electric bikes. But it's just like the car industry. There's everything from a basic Chevrolet all the way up to a $150,000 Mercedes or $400,000 Ferrari. We're in the middle of that. We're more like a Lexus or a Toyota. So the opportunity for change is getting better. They're adding more technology. We have odometers, trip odometers, speedometers, front and rear headlights. Our latest model now has brake lights attached to it. So the technology is getting better, but not necessarily less expensive.
Thank you, caller. You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Coda Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with two large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, two bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit arnaldis.com or call 805-962-5394.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290. And Don, in the beginning of the show, we were talking about articles that dealt partly with the trade deficit tariff issue. And my question is, do you manufacture these bicycles? And if so, are you going to be impacted by tariffs on materials?
Great question. I'm glad I got a chance to chime in on this. A couple of issues. Number one, yes, we do. A bicycle is basically an assembly, so there's about 50 items on a bill of materials, and we specify what they are. So we're much like Apple, and we do the design of the product here, but they're assembled in China. In fact, about 99% of all bikes come from China, despite what other people might tell you, because the components are made there. So when it gets to the trade deficit and the taxation problem, the tariffs, I'm kind of a free trade guy that I think that if there's a duty, then it needs to be reciprocal. So in our case, there is no duty on electric bicycles when they brought in here, so we kind of like it the way it is. And there isn't too much chance that we would be exporting them back to China. However, the European Union has decided to put a 150 to 180% tariff on bikes that are made in China that come into the thing because they say that we're dumping them, which is not true. It's false. It's kind of protectionism. And if you look at the European idea of protectionism, they certainly have it. If we import a Mercedes-Benz from Germany, there's a 10% duty on it. If we export a Cadillac to Germany, it's a 25% duty. And somehow that just doesn't seem fair to me. It needs to be reciprocal. So if it's 25%, it needs to be 25 both ways. In my opinion, it should be zero both ways, but at least it should be fair both ways. As far as the deficit part, I have a very simple analogy that, if I was a pen manufacturer and I bought a pen in China for a dollar, I was a pen, importer, and I bought it for a dollar and I sold it to my distributor for $2 and the consumer paid $3 for it, how much of that money is made in the USA? So me as the distributor, I would be hiring people and shipping and all that in the U.S., and then the consumer would buy it, say, from the local stationery store or Staples or one of the other stationery things, and they paid $3 for it. $2 of that is actually made in the U.S. And then the question is, what happens to the other dollar that's sent to China? And I jokingly say, then they loan it back to us. So at the end of the day, we have the goods and the money.
That's not even a joke. They do.
So I'm not so sure this is a bad thing that we import a lot of goods from China. The only answer to this manufacturing problem is going to be robotics. As we can get more automated, it doesn't matter whether a robot is here in California or is in China. If we can get robots to make equipment like our bikes, then it won't make any difference. Then we can be back in the manufacturing segment here in the U.S.
Is there any steel or aluminum in a bicycle?
Like most items, it's almost marginal. But it doesn't. The particular one that they're trying to do is they're just trying to even the playing field. There is aluminum in our bikes, but we're not going to pay a tariff because it's a finished good. It's only the raw materials that are being challenged, taxed.
Gotcha. So tell us, how did you come up with this idea to start an electric bike company?
Well, I lived at the beach in Newport Beach, and I lived at the top of a hill, and I loved to ride my bike down to the beach, but I hated riding back up that hill. And I'd heard someplace years ago about electric bikes, and I thought, well, that would be a good boost to get up the hill. I could ride my bike all day long, and then when I went home, I could ride up the hill. So I bought a bike online, and it was a terrible bike, but it got me up the hill. And then I opened a retail store to sell nothing but electric bikes because I discovered that the bike industry had a disdain for electric bikes. They thought that we were somehow cheating. I'm not so sure who we were cheating, but they viewed him as a cheater.
Cheating yourself out of the exercise, I guess.
Well, yeah, but cheating who? If I'm cheating myself, what businesses of that are theirs? And the truth of the matter is there's a lot of statistics out now that show that riding an electric bike can get you more exercise than riding a regular bike because you're going to ride it more often, you're going to ride it further. Granted, you won't be strenuous, but in the hills of Santa Barbara, where Santa Barbara is one big hill from my perspective, there's no better way to get up and down the hills. The main reason people stop riding bikes is hills. If you can overcome that, then an electric bike overcomes that for you where you can ride up the hill. And it's actually more fun riding an electric bike up a hill than it is down a hill. And I don't think you can say that about a regular bicycle.
And so how fast do the bikes go? What's the top speed?
So the top speed is regulated to 20 miles an hour. That's to conform to the California law and the federal law, and in most states now, that if it's 20 miles or below, it's classified as a bicycle. So you can ride it anywhere that you can ride a bicycle. So they can go faster. There are people that sell bikes that go faster than 20 miles an hour. There's a classification to go up to 28, and those you can ride in the bike lane but not on the bike path. So if you want to ride on the bike path and the bike lane,
then you probably want a 20-mile-per-bike. If you want to ride not on the bike path but just in bike lanes, then you could get a 28-mile-per-bike. But the reality is that's faster than most of our customers want to go in the first place. 20 is pretty fast on a bike. 28 is just obscene, in my opinion.
How heavy are the bikes today?
So the bikes weigh exactly the same as a regular bike would, plus a motor and a battery. And quite frequently people ask me and said, what can you, you know, how can you make the bikes lighter? I said, real easy. We take off the motor and the battery. So the motor weighs about 6 pounds and the battery weighs about 6 pounds. So you're adding 12 pounds to a bike. So a typical bike is, electric bike is somewhere between 40 and 60 pounds, depending on other, you know, other considerations on the style and the shape.
So the, one of the issues, I guess, is for people who are older or people who aren't that strong is actually getting the bike to the bike path, because 60 pounds is heavy for people, some people.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of ways to get it there. If they can't ride it there, then there's certainly racks. We have a rack that we sell made by Thule that has a ramp on it, so you just ride it up the ramp or glide it up the ramp, and you can even use the throttle to propel it up the ramp if you don't want to lift it at all. But I have sciatica. I'm 61 years old, and I have sciatica, so I can't lift the bike. So I make sure that myself and other of our customers that can't lift the bike have a way to get it on the back of a bike rack.
So tell us about how what your business model is, how you distribute the bikes, because you're really across the country at this point and internationally.
We have 132 Pedego branded stores, and if you think of a branded store, you can think of Apple, you can think of Tesla, you can think of anybody else that sells, you know, directly to the consumer. So we have 132 of these, and they are all owned and operated by independent entrepreneurs. The one in Santa Barbara we opened up at 100 Haley Street is just such an organization. That store is also owned by somebody who has a store back in Spring Lake, New Jersey. So we're independently owned and operated at the local level, but we provide the service direct, and they only carry the Pedego brand. It's tough today to survive as an independent without any kind of strength behind you. And we're not a franchise. We're a licensee model, which means our dealers don't pay us any fees other than buy the product from us. So it's kind of a win-win. We work together with them, and they have loyalty to us, and we have loyalty to them. And they're able to provide the service and the specialty and the knowledge on our particular brand of bikes, on an in-depth knowledge, because we're finding out that the customers that are buying electric bikes are not bike people. They're non-bike people that want to get back into cycling. And they don't have a knowledge of the bikes like you'd expect them to have if they went into a bike shop. So
how do you keep quality, though? If it's not a franchise, how do you deal with an operator that doesn't know what they're doing and is giving your bikes a bad reputation? Can you cancel them?
Well, yeah, under certain requirements, but actually that's never been a problem for us, because 132 of our stores, they've all come organically, and they start out by renting one, which, by the way, all of our stores rent the bikes, which I recommend to anybody who's considering getting an electric bike, don't buy one. And it sounds strange coming from me, but don't buy one, rent one. And that way you get to have the experience. So our dealers all start out as customers renting them, then they buy one, and then they decide they want to open up a store in their town. So all of our dealers are passionate. It's never been a problem with 132 stores where we had a dissatisfied customer because our people weren't. They're passionately involved. They're typically, they're baby boomers. We've got several that are in their 70s. Our dealer in Las Vegas is opening his second store. He's 77 years old, and he's just passionate about the bike. So
now, do you offer training programs? Do you offer training programs for?
Absolutely, yes. There's factory training here that we provide both here at our headquarters here in Fountain Valley in Orange County, and we also do in-store training.
I wonder if the idea of renting rather than buying is applicable to marriage as well. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It was a goal that I wanted to achieve from the very beginning.
I'm a 40-year-old man that walked in there to get his high school diploma. I wasn't sure if I could do it. It was very hard for me, but the teachers, the counselors, they help you. One of the teachers was Miss Araceli. Miss Araceli, she gave me direction. Every single time I had a question, she'll put down whatever she's doing and she'll come over and she'll sit there with you until you get it.
At age 47, with the help of his teacher, Marco finished his high school diploma.
50% of getting your high school diploma is walking through those doors. The other 50% is doing the work. Getting your high school diploma, it is a life-changing experience. It really is. It catapults you to where you want to go.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hey, at our startup, my team and I move at the speed of tech 24/7. And every single day, it's information overload. It's coming at me from all directions. And you know what? Bottom line, I just need the news that matters. So where do I turn? Local radio and TV. I want to hear from people who live and work in my town. They give me the real story with information I know I can rely on. So where else can I find out what's happening in my community? Weather and traffic, things that affect my family and my business. I want to stay informed by sources I trust. My local radio and TV stations. For the best entertainment, sports, news, traffic, and weather with no agenda and more reliable than other platforms. So if you ask me for the information I want anytime, anywhere, I stay local. Support your local station. Text radio to 52886 today. Furnished by the NAB and this station. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. So if you were to go to Arnaldi's on...
Arnaldi's.
What did I say?
You're just making it have an R.
Arnaldi's. If you were going to go to Arnaldi's on a motorized bicycle, Don, where do you park it? Is this something that...
That would be a great idea because they just took out all that parking on Cota Street. So this is a good question, Don.
Well, I can tell you that a lot of developers are looking at the electric bike category to put, instead of building parking garages, you can fit 7 bicycles or electric bicycles in the same space you can 1 parking place. So theoretically, you could reduce traffic, you could reduce parking, you could reduce all the things. So it has huge advantages. If you went to the hardware store to pick something up, you can then, if you had our cargo bike, you can certainly carry all kinds of things. We have pizza delivery companies using our bikes. The city of San Luis Obispo just bought 4 of our bikes for their police department to use. So there are a lot of different applications. I'm a huge fan of anything electric. I own a Tesla. I live in a solar-powered house, and I've just invested in an electric motorcycle dealership. So I'm convinced that solar energy, along with electric transportation, is the best solution for transportation problems, whether it's a car for longer distance or a bike for local distances. And you can park them anywhere you can a bicycle. So if they have a bike rack there, that'd be the best place to park it, usually right up front.
So you had mentioned earlier that the big bike brands kind of shunned the electric bike niche. And why do you think that is? Why do you think that they have refused to embrace this wave of technology and, you know, bike-ness, I guess?
Sure. It's countercultural to their thinking. They are all about competition and going faster and having a lighter bike and, beating the last week's trip. So they have a competitive attitude. And to some of them have expressed to me that they don't want us spreads, as they call us, cluttering up their trails. Somehow they think that only experienced bicycle riders should be entitled to use the infrastructure, which we all pay for. So I think that's at the store level. I also think it's at the employee level. Most of the people that work in a bike shop are hardcore cyclists, and I respect that and honor it. And quite frankly, I'm thankful for it, because if it hadn't been for that attitude, Pedego wouldn't exist.
I really think that you're tapping into something as the baby boomer generation starts to retire and no longer have either the ability or the desire to use a traditional bike for hills, as you had said. You're going to be able to capture that whole market. I think there's some large number of baby boomers retiring every day.
Well, Diane, you can talk to anybody in the bike industry, and they'll tell you that only about 5% of the general population ride a bike on a regular basis. And some might argue and claim it's 10%, and that's great. I don't care if it's 15%. It's the other 80 to 90% that we're interested in. We're interested in people who would not ride a bicycle today if it hadn't been for electric, and that's the majority of our customers. So they get out and you have the fun and the joy and the excitement of going out and the adventure, if you will, of riding a bicycle again
without the negatives. So in a case like Santa Barbara, where you've got fabulous infrastructure all the way out to UC Santa Barbara, all the way south on the bike trails, all the way down to Carpinteria, you've got fabulous, not quite to Carpinteria, I exaggerated, I meant to say, what's the town 2 miles south, to Montecito and beyond?
Summerland.
I'm sorry?
Summerland.
That was a. You've got fabulous infrastructure, and the only way people can experience is to go and rent one and go try it, and you'll find out that it's a whole new level of fun that you didn't experience. And we're finding husbands and wives find it a good way to do something together, where it's the great equalizer. In fact, truth be known, if you're a lighter, women are typically lighter than men. If they're riding on one, they're going to go faster. They're going to get up the hills a little faster than the men, so they have a little bit of an advantage. But at the end of the day, they're both only going to go 20 miles an hour.
You know what's ironic about bicycle riders that are snobbish against electric bikes is that I see more and more bicyclists being driven up to Camino Cielo by car and then riding just straight down, which I think is cheating, but... you know, for them to be critical of electric bikes is sort of ironic.
Well, and
well, yeah, when you think about Lance Armstrong, too, he redefined cheating. So how dare they call us cheaters?
Right. Well, it's funny when you said earlier that Santa Barbara is a city of hills. I never thought I would have disagreed with you, except I did ride my bike from the beach all the way up to Alomar. And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, I had no idea that was a huge hill. The whole way, I could have used an electric bike.
Well, any of your listeners that want to go into our store in Santa Barbara, we'll give them 1 hour free rental to go try one out. So if they want to try one, it won't cost anything. Just get exposed to it, try it out, and see if it's something that's right for you.
Perfect. Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for that. So why do you think that Pedego continues to outsell the other major brands of electric bikes?
Well, we're dedicated. This is our only thing we do. All we do is design and sell electric bikes. We're not in any other businesses. So in most of the big bike companies, this is just a product line to them. And the reason that they've since recently engaged is they found that the bike industry has flattened and is actually on the decline. People aren't buying bikes in the numbers they were. So they're kind of forced into it. The other thing and the most critical element is all of our bikes have a throttle on. The bike industry is making bikes without throttle because they think you should pedal. So they require you to pedal. That would be a Class 1 bike. Class 2 bike means it has a throttle. Our bikes are both Class 1 and Class 2 bikes, which means there's a throttle. So somebody has a bad hip, a bad knee, or they just need a little help to get started, the throttle helps them do that. They can also use it as a pedal assist function, but it allows people to, you know, to go out and have the experience and ride it. I'm going to not say like a motorcycle, but like that, that they don't have to pedal at all if they choose not to.
Right, that's great. So for those of us that don't want to pedal up the big hill, so you opened...
Now, there's another solution, too. You could actually hire someone to ride your regular bike. Then you don't have to do anything.
What are you going to be in, like the cart in the back like my kids?
No, home watching television.
I think you're missing the point, Neil. So you opened your first electric bike store in 2007 in Newport Beach. And now your bikes are available in over 40 countries and on 6 continents. From an operational standpoint, what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced during your expansion phase?
Well, the single biggest challenge we had was distribution. We found that the traditional distribution of bicycles, the local bicycle shop is not loyal. You can build them up, you can help them, you can train them, you can teach them everything they need, and then you go there 6 months later and find out that they're selling another brand because they had what I call a shinier penny. And so we wanted to prevent that from happening. So our biggest challenge was the fourth P, placement, and the most important one. And we decided, we looked at different models and looked at the success of Apple and saw that Apple really became very successful once they opened their own stores. So once we decided that out in 2011, we began opening our own stores, the first one in Huntington Beach, California. And now we have 130 of them globally, about 100 in the U.S., 8 in Canada, and the rest are scattered throughout Europe and in South Africa and Australia, New Zealand. So, you know, it's just a matter of, and the Internet has allowed us to do that, where our popularity became very popular. And people in these different countries came to us and said, wow, I love your bike. I'd like to distribute them here in the U.K. or in Italy, or our second best distributor is in France. So we have several stores in France, and they people try them, they test ride them, they try them out, and they find out they love them, and then they go home and they buy one.
Where do you ship them from? They're made in China, or they're assembled in the United States, or they all ship from different places?
We have three factories in China and one factory in Taiwan. So depending on what bikes are ordered, they're shipped from different factories. And all the ones that come to the U.S. come in through the port here in Los Angeles. The ones that go to Canada go into Vancouver. And in Europe, they go to the ports where they're locally. So they're shipped directly from the factory in China. And we have our own employees in Asia all the time doing quality inspection and making sure that we're delivering the product that the customers expect to get.
So that's your like quality assurance to make sure that they're all being made to that high standard that Pedego customers have been grown accustomed to.
We build every bike and test ride it in our factories in Asia before it's put in a box and shipped. It's just completely assembled, unassembled, and put in a box. Most companies make a bike; it's not even ever ridden where it's manufactured. It's only just put together and strapped together, and nobody's ever ridden it before it gets to the customer.
You know, it's interesting that they're made in China because Chinese typically have always been aficionados of bicycles. I wonder if you ever asked the Chinese man on the street what he thinks of an electric bicycle.
Well, I can answer that for you. They think poorly of them because that's what they did when they were poor. They rode bikes, and now they've upgraded to cars. So they look as a bicycle as a lower form of transportation. And they don't look at it as recreation. They look at it as transportation. So they've got a different view on it.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KCSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe. One of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Coda Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food, prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with two large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, two bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit Arnaldi's.com or call 805-962-5394.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Don, on the break, there was some discussion about seat comfort. So how does Pedego deal with that, and are there different seat options?
That's my favorite topic, because the most important thing on any product you buy, particularly an electric bike, is that you're comfortable. So we have an upriding riding position on most of our bikes. For those that want to be uncomfortable, we have other models that kind of push you forward like a traditional bicycle. But the seat is the most important element, and we tested 10 different seats before we launched our seat 10 years ago, and we've kept the same seat. We recently announced an upgrade to it, and when they're available in our stores, which is a memory foam seat. So if you want just that extra level. So it's a big, wide, comfortable seat, not too wide, but comfortable enough to ride. You know, and this is a money show, so to talk about money, the investment in an electric bike will yield fun. It may not return yield a return on your investment from any other perspective, but there's nothing you can buy today that's more fun than riding an electric bike. And if you invested $3,000 in one, we guarantee that people will have fun on it. And that's probably the most thing, but they need to be comfortable. So upright riding position where you're sitting up where you can see and be seen is nothing you can, is not anything I can explain over the phone or over an interview. You need to do it in person and try one out.
We just got an email question, and is, do your electric bikes have a recumbent seat, one that leans back?
Not yet. The only one that does is our three-wheeler does. It has a backrest on it, but that same seat could be put on any bike.
Gotcha. So, you know, given that Pedagos is known for having best-in-class customer experience and customer service, how were you able to maintain that culture as the company grew?
By hiring passionate people. I believe in hiring for intelligence. You can't teach smart. So we look for people that are smart and that have passion. And all of our people that work here and in all of our dealers, they all have a passion for electric bikes. And that's pretty hard to trade out for anything. So when somebody comes into a store and they ask about electric bikes, we are very excited to tell them about it. And I believe education is the new marketing. Our stores, we don't teach any selling skills. We don't need to. We believe that our job is to educate the customer so they can learn about it, and then they'll make a good decision based on that education.
And what if you make a bad decision? Is there a way to sell the bike back, or is there a market for it other than a newspaper ad?
Yeah, so there's a huge market for used bikes, and we are the only company probably in the world that manufactures used bikes because we have a rental fleet. So we found a big demand, and there's usually people waiting in line when we retire a rental fleet. Just like a car, it's sometimes a lot less expensive to buy a one-year-old or two-year-old car. The same thing is true about electric bikes. And yes, there is an underground market for them, whether it's on Craigslist or even in our stores, where used bikes are bought and sold.
And so, you know, in our last few minutes of time, do you have any advice for those people listening who are currently working on bringing a new creative idea such as yours to the to life? What advice
Absolutely.
Do you have for them?
So I would start off with the word passion. Do something you love. You know, in my first 30 years in career, I liked what I did, but I didn't love what I do. And once you love what you do, then it's no longer work. It's like a hobby. It's like, I don't go to work every day. I come to my hobby. And so if you have that passion for whatever product or service that you're offering, it no longer becomes work. And more importantly, it's actually you'll be better at it because you are involved in it and study it and live it and breathe it and sleep it and wake up thinking about it every day. The other piece of advice is I'd say to study all four P's and make sure that you've got the right price point. And that means that, you know, your customers are willing to pay for it, your suppliers can get paid, and you can make a reasonable amount of margin on it. If any of those three don't work, it won't work sustainable. As far as placement, you got to decide how you're going to get it to the customer. As far as the promotion, you have to tell people about it. So each one of these things is critical to the whole equation. So we covered price, product, promotion. You have to tell people about the product. Of course, you've got to have a best-in-class product as well.
Well, perfect. Don, thank you so much for being here with us today and for all your advice and the interesting story about Pedago Bikes. And for all of you listening, Don said there's a one-hour free rental. So go down to Pedago on Haley Street, Haley and State, and check them out because they're a fun, cool ride.
Thank you, Don. You've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.